This is On Target St. John's, a look at politics, crime, education. What's happening here with the people who know? The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now, your On Target St. John's host, Linda Swain.
Good Tuesday afternoon, everybody. This is On Target. I'm Ben Murphy, sitting in for Linda Swain today. There was a buzz online this weekend surrounding vaccine passports and getting it downloaded on your phone, or in some cases, a bit of a wait to do so. As of next Friday, that's October the 22nd, we will all need a vaccine passport to access most non-essential services. Earlier on in the pandemic, privacy commissioners from across the country expressed the need for caution when it came to vaccine passports. Michael Harvey is the privacy commissioner for this province. He joins me live in studio, and isn't that nice to say, to talk all about vaccine passports and privacy for the next hour. Michael, good afternoon, and thanks for joining me.
Ben, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's so nice to have someone in studio being able to see you face to face at this time. So, Michael, I guess after first off a few days to review now the app NL VaxPass, the province's vaccine passport, are you comfortable with it and that it's not a violation of our privacy?
Well, I actually tried it for the first time a few minutes ago.
Okay.
Coming in here to these offices, one of the VOCM staff, I had it set up on my phone, the pass. I set it up on Friday and went through that process with the waiting a few minutes to get the information so I could upload it into the app, and then just coming in here. One of the staff scanned the QR code and she showed it to me, and we saw that it didn't keep any of the information. I saw it didn't show much to her. It's basically green, Michael Harvey, let this guy in, and that's it. And she said it doesn't keep any of the information, and then it just disappears after a few minutes. So that helps me be, right. Let's say cautiously optimistic. There's still a few things I think that I'm going to need to know over the next couple of weeks. My understanding is the government is continuing to work on the on what I understand is a special measures order.
Right.
That will like many other special measures orders under the during the pandemic. Is issued under the Public Health Protection and Promotion Act under the authority of the Chief Medical Officer of Health, and that will provide the legislative foundation for this. Now, so we're going to be really interested in exactly what that says, because there's a few things about that will give us a great degree of confidence about how it's going to operate. I'm pretty cautiously optimistic so far on the design of the app and the technical briefings that we've received about it and how it's going to operate.
So speaking of those special measures orders, what would you like to see in there?
Well, the key element that allows me to tell Newfoundlanders and Labradorians that this new program does not involve new surveillance of you is that, just like your staff member told me, this thing does not track that. It does not keep the information. It does not track that I've been here. There's no database created here or at any other facility I go to that says here's where I was and I came at this time and I was here for this long. Because in this society, we don't believe that it is necessary to, and we don't think that Newfoundlanders and Labradorians want to be tracked where they go, and we don't think it's necessary. Now, obviously, there's requirements for contact tracing, and those have been in place throughout the pandemic, and we've kind of dealt with those through the pandemic, but we don't want new electronic databases created that track people where they go, and that is not the design of this program. We were told we want to see that in the special measures order, that the facilities are not allowed to collect that information. Because some businesses might be quite interested in getting it. It might be of interesting marketing value.
Right.
Right. They might be interested to know who's coming and why they're coming and so on. But we think that that is not the intent of this program, and that businesses should be prohibited from doing that. Now, the design of the app itself, the Verifier app that your staff member used and we were briefed on, it does not collect the information. But it's possible, we think, that another app, you could get some other app and use that. So we would be looking for a prohibition on businesses or facilities using any other kind of app but that government app. We know that's the intent. we'd like to see it in writing.
Yeah, and I was going to say, what concern is there around any other apps that may be able to read these QR codes?
Well, that's it, right? That they would potentially track the information, and then we wouldn't know what became of it, because that information is valuable from a marketing perspective. And we don't think people want to be tracked and should be tracked in that way. And it really, I think, will help help increase uptake in this program. Right. If we can tell people, and they can trust us, that this is not new surveillance.
Could the difficulty, like you mentioned, you had to wait in that queue for a little bit. We saw some different wait times for people throughout the weekend. Me personally, I didn't have any encounters with that at all. But could the difficulty people are having logging in, could that affect their privacy in any way?
I don't understand how it could.
Right.
The biggest problem, I think, is if people see a little problem like that and then they lose faith in the program. But here, you know, I think it's really important for us not to mistake little hiccups for some fundamental problem with the program. I mean, look at what's happened. I think the premier announced today that there's been somewhere between 150,000, 180,000 people that set this thing up. That just the electronic form of it. Like, there's numerous other forms.
Yeah, exactly.
That you can use, but just the electronic one, apparently between 150,000, 180,000. I think I saw that tweet this morning. That's a lot. And when you look at this program, and this is a pretty radical thing that's being done very, very quickly. Normally, an initiative this ambitious would be something that would be in development for years. And this has been put together quite quickly. Now, you know, I'm not suggesting that is inherently problematic. A lot of very smart people have been focusing on this and working very hard at it. And we in this province have been able to learn the lessons of other provinces that have gone before and have even other hiccups. But, you know, we're watching carefully from our office in our little area of expertise to see if there's any more serious problems with privacy that are emerging as this rolls out. So far, we haven't seen any. And I don't think that this little hiccup is a privacy problem. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I waited about half hour last Friday to set mine up. And then when I did it for a family member, it only took 3 minutes. So I think things are getting ironed out.
Speaking of instances in other jurisdictions, there have been some breaches of privacy in these other areas. What did those breaches look like?
Yeah, we asked the Newfoundland Labrador Center for Health Information about those breaches and if they had learned those lessons from them. So they talked about one that was in Quebec where people were able to kind of what we sometimes call white hat hackers. People who are interested in testing the vulnerability of a system by just trying to see if they can get into it so that they can show where the vulnerabilities were. So they were able to demonstrate that they were able to do a couple things, get more information than was intended to be released, and also they were able to spoof the identities of people. So we were able, the center says that basically Quebec learned from those incidents, and the vendors learned, and they were able to iron them out. There's another well-publicized issue in Alberta, where a private sector app had been developed, and it turned out that private sector app was nowhere near as privacy sensitive as it had been portraying itself to be. And this is a real reason why federal, provincial, and territorial commissioners came out so early in May with the principles that we came out with, because we knew that this was coming, and we were concerned that we would have all sorts of private sector vaccine passports develop, and that some of them wouldn't necessarily have the privacy protections that a government program would. I mean, let's be honest, Ben. We're not in love with the fact that we have to have a vaccine passport, and we don't really want one to exist. And we hope that as soon as we can get out of the situation, we can, and mm-hmm. we can move on to something else. But if we're going to have one of these programs, and we do believe, commissioners across the country do believe that these are justified, We believe that a government should be operating them, the governments that are subject to our privacy laws.
And there have been some complaints that, you know, it's different in every jurisdiction or it's different in every province. And will my vaccine passport here work here, here, or here? Would it have been easier or better from a privacy standpoint if the federal government rolled out some kind of nationwide vaccine passport, or is the provincial jurisdiction the better option?
Well, that's federalism for you, right? And there's good things and there's bad things about it. I think what it looks like is happening here in this province and in other ones is that we're setting ourselves up with QR codes that are all kind of similar.
Right.
And meanwhile, the feds are doing some work. And I know that here the province has a future state in mind that will sync up and allow other provinces to sync up so that we will be able to use our vaccine passport, hopefully, in other jurisdictions. The good thing about federalism, though, is because we're all doing our thing, it does allow us to learn from each other and find out what works and what doesn't. So just as we've learned from Quebec. And also, we have 14 privacy commissioners in this country. I sometimes lose track. There's a lot of them. And we talk all the time, and we all have different ideas. And so just as the same way that we have that level of innovation occurring across the country, we have that much oversight.
Right.
And so I think, yeah, sometimes federalism can be complicated, but it also has its advantages too.
We're going to take a quick break here on Target. We continue this conversation with the province's privacy commissioner, Michael Harvey, when we come back.
Weekdays on VOCM, it's Open Line with your host, Patty Daly. Join the conversation each morning from 9 a.m. to noon on your VOCM. We get people talking.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
Welcome back to the program. You're listening to On Target. I'm Ben Murphy, sitting in for Linda Swain. We're chatting vaccine passports and privacy with the province's privacy commissioner, Michael Harvey. So, Michael, immediately after the app was launched, we saw some people online who jumped out to show that, look, I've got my app, but in some of the pictures, the QR codes were pretty blatant and pretty evident right there in the middle of the picture. So I guess, why is it so important to keep that QR code private?
I think that's a great question, Ben. And Minister Stoodley was talking about that last week at the launch, but you can't get the message out enough. I think that these QR codes, if they're high enough resolution pictures, then they can potentially be scanned. And you can pull out the data that's in them, even a picture of them, right? So if you put your QR code on your Facebook account, and I understand people are eager to encourage other people to
exactly.
sign up for the program and to demonstrate that this is something, you know, they believe we all should be doing and say, let's, you know, we're all in this together kind of thing. So, I certainly appreciate the sentiment. But the danger is that someone could grab that QR code and spoof it, and they could go ahead and misrepresent themselves as you with that
right.
QR code. They could reproduce it, and they could pull the information out of it and do something with it, because embedded in that QR code, even though when the verifier reads it, they only see green means go and red means no, they... embedded in it is the more detailed information about what vaccine you got, where you got it, your date of birth, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
That's all in there. And you don't want that information getting out there. So you really need to treat that like it's your MCP number, like it is a piece of personal health information belonging to you. So I really would encourage people not to go putting it on their social media. I certainly wouldn't discourage from people saying whatever they want about, you know, encouraging people to mm-hmm. Participate in the program. I keep that little mysterious looking box in your pocket.
And speaking of the green means go, red means stop, is that the best way to do things privacy wise?
I think so. So when we going back to those principles that we talked about in May, probably one of the most important one is the idea that it's the minimum necessary use of information. And that is a principle that's embedded in our law, in the Access to Information and Protection of Privacy Act. And it's embedded in privacy laws across this country and really around the world, that if a government program is going to be using personal information, it needs to use the minimum amount necessary to get the job done. Now, so let's say that that you're operating a facility and I'm going to you and I'm showing you my Vax Pass. Well, you know, if as it would be the case for almost everybody, you know, it's because I've gotten two vaccines, right? That's the case for almost everyone. But maybe I've gotten three vaccines. And so if I was to show, if you were to learn that I got three vaccines, you'd learn something about me. You know, young fellow like Michael Harvey, what's he doing with three vaccines? He's probably got some medical condition that I don't know about. So that's an additional piece of information that you don't need to know.
Right.
And that I don't necessarily want to tell you. But you don't need to know it. All you need to know is let this guy in. Let's say that I have a medical exemption. Now, very, very few people have a medical exemption because there's very few of those that have been approved. Mm-hmm. That guidance comes from the College of Physicians and Surgeons. It's medical advice as it should be. And again, I don't need to be telling you whether I'm one of those people. All you need to know is let this guy in. So that design of the program is consistent with our privacy laws, consistent with that minimum use. It's really a great example of something we call privacy by design. That and this is a principle, an idea that has been, it's actually been trademarked by my counterpart in Ontario, the Office of the Information Privacy Commissioner for Ontario. And it says that whenever you're designing a new program, think about the privacy questions first at the outset. It's a pretty simple idea. Mm-hmm. But we think one thing we like about this program is that they have taken a privacy by design approach. And we think that as this government here in Newfoundland and Labrador, which does have a digital government agenda, moves forward, that we think that this is a good example. And we think the COVID Alert app is another good example where they've taken a privacy by design approach and they've advanced the level of service. So you know, if there's silver lining to the pandemic, then we can point to how these apps have been developed quickly with a privacy by design approach. And we would encourage the government to take a similar type of approach when expanding its digital offerings in other areas as well.
Michael, has your office received many calls from the general public expressing concern about the vaccine passport?
We've been getting a few, not overwhelming numbers, but we've been getting a few. It's really important for there to be oversight. That was another one of the principles that we advanced in May. And so we are available to provide oversight of this program in the area of privacy. I mean, there's all sorts of other aspects of the program that potentially would require some oversight, and those are outside of our mandate. But if a person believes that their individual privacy has been breached, then we can accept a complaint. I don't think we've gotten a complaint like that yet. If they believe that there's something in the privacy, in the design of the program that we've missed that is fundamentally privacy invasive, then we can certainly investigate that. Although, you know, I think people have, people have heard that, you know, again, even though we haven't seen the special measures order yet and we're really anxious to do that, by and large, our assessment of the program as a whole is it does meet our privacy principles. If people believe, though, that that the government is just doing the wrong thing, that this is a wrong decision, that's a policy decision of the provincial government that I think people will need to talk to the provincial government about or talk to their MHA. That's not the kind of thing that we can that we would investigate, because, you know, people who just think it's wrong, you know, that's a government policy decision. That's why we have democratically elected MHAs.
We've been talking a lot about the privacy when it comes to the app and our phones, but there are lots of people out there who won't necessarily have the app on their phone or don't have smartphones. Are there any privacy concerns around the hard copy of this vaccine passport?
Well, I mean, I guess the biggest one is the potential for it to be lost or misplaced. The app on my phone is protected by the protections of the phone. If I lose my phone, then people would have a hard time getting into it because it has a password on it. I can remotely wipe the phone just as pretty much everyone else with a modern smartphone can do it. So that's an extra layer of protection that you have with the smartphone opportunity. But of course, that's not an option for everybody, and it's not a preference for everybody. And I certainly respect that. It's certainly something that during the consultation we had lots of questions about. What are the alternatives? And we believe that there should be alternatives. But fundamentally, the provision of a cue card on paper is there's nothing privately fundamentally wrong with it. Just really encourage people to keep it safe.
And Michael, as well, how would you rate the provincial government's work here in terms of privacy with this app?
Yeah, I mean, I give them a B+, or maybe a B. I mean, it depends on how easy a grader I would be. I mean, that's not my role to grade. let's be clear. I'm just saying that almost, in a spirit of goodwill. But our role is to provide oversight and provide consultation. You know, the key for us is really love to see that the legislative basis. Again, going back to those principles, because that's why we put them out there. One of the principles was, what's your legal foundation? And so a lot of the fine details will be in the words in that special measures order. And even though it is, in our view, it's not a glaring gap that it's not done yet. It certainly would have been better if that special measures order had been available for review and finalized prior to launch. But so long as we have a chance to review it, provide comment on it, and it gets finalized before the 22nd of October, that's the most important part.
Any idea when you might receive that special measures order? Have you heard anything from government?
Only that they will provide it to us when they can.
Were you happy with the consultation process leading up to the launch?
So we were provided with two technical briefings by the Center for Health Information, and the technical briefings were great. The Department of Digital Government and Service NL and the Office of the Chief Information Officer, which are involved because of the MyGovNL portal and the connection there, they also reached out to us. We've reviewed a draft, what we call a privacy impact assessment, that they're developing. So, this is all happening really fast. Certainly that the level of technical engagement was pretty good, and we think got to give kudos to the technical staff. They're working very hard on it.
We are going to take another break here on Target. We continue this conversation with the province's privacy commissioner, Michael Harvey, when we come back. Right now, it is 1:35.
Saturday morning, join us for the Irish Newfoundland Show. Send your request to irishnl@vocm.com or submit them online at vocm.com.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
Welcome back to the program. You're listening to On Target. I'm Ben Murphy, sitting in for Linda Swain today. We are chatting vaccine passports and privacy with the province's privacy commissioner, Michael Harvey. And Michael, I do want to switch gears here a bit now. We've been talking about privacy when it comes to vaccine passports and still staying with the pandemic. Recently, there were some cases at local schools, and people at those schools, they wanted more information or as much information as possible about who in the schools had tested positive than the Department of Health was really willing to give them. And we've heard that pretty consistently in the COVID-19 briefing since. But why is it the department and health authorities will release some information, but not other information?
Yeah, that's a great question, Ben. And it's a really complicated thing that we've been dealing with in a variety of different contexts through the pandemic. And the Department of Health and Community Services, in particular, the health authorities, have been trying to walk that line. And there's really two broad sets of considerations. One is privacy, because, as I mentioned earlier in the hour, governments, when they collect, use, and disclose personal information, or in this case, personal health information, they have to have a lawful reason to do it. And so if they are telling the public information such as someone in this school has COVID, or someone in this class has COVID, or someone of this age range has COVID, if a person can reasonably figure out, oh, wait a second, that's so-and-so, then they've disclosed that personal information, even if they don't say the name. But, you know, if we're talking about in a school and there's a kid who's been out for a week and in grade four, and they say, oh, there's a case in Madame Smith's class, then, yeah, everyone's going to know who that is, mm-hmm. right? So that is a disclosure of personal health information. And it's not that the chief medical officer health cannot do that. In fact, she does have the authority to do that for a lawful purpose. If there is a public health reason for her to disclose that information, then yeah, she can go ahead and do that. But if she doesn't, if it's not beneficial for the public health, then she's not allowed to do it. So that's really what it comes down to. And so when the chief medical officer of health is making decisions about what information to put out there and what information not to put out there, she's going to have to be thinking, well, okay, how is it serving the public health for me to put that out there, right? So sometimes it is important for people to know. Like they need to know. She needs to disclose everybody in Madame Smith's class. They need to know. Mm-hmm. You've had a case in your class. And yeah, you're going to figure out that it's Johnny. He's been gone for a week. Yeah, you're going to know that. You need to know so that you can go get tested. That is a lawful disclosure, right, for public health reason. But on the other hand, it is not lawful for her to tell you and me.
Right.
Because we don't need to know that.
Yeah.
Right. And so they're always trying to walk that line. And they've been doing it the whole pandemic. Sometimes there's a good public health reason not to disclose the information. I remember really early on when there were very few cases in the province, there was this release of information that said, oh, we've got two cases in Central. And everybody out in Central was saying, well, geez, I want to know if this is in mm-hmm. my community.
Yep.
So that I know if I'm at risk. And what the chief medical officer of health was saying in those instances was, you assume that it is in your community. If I tell you that it's not in your community, if I tell you it's in, this is in Lewisport and you're in Springdale, and you can say, well, I guess I'm in Springdale. I guess I got no cases here. I can go about and live my life and do what I did as normal. But that's, she didn't know for sure that there weren't any cases in Springdale. All she knew was that there was one in Lewisport. So she told us all, the minister told us all, and then at the same time I was talking in public as well and saying, you have to assume that your next-door neighbor has COVID. That's the only way really to be safe. So in that instance, there was a sound public health reason not to disclose, as well as, of course, a privacy reason not to disclose. So when we were dealing with these cases in the schools relatively recently, there were some cases in McDonald Drive. And of course, I was kind of interested as well. My kids go to McDonald Drive Junior High. So they interact sometimes with kids from McDonald Drive Elementary. Yeah, I was curious to know. And I'm sure everyone was curious to know. And there's anxiety. Yeah, I get it. People want to know as much as they can. But what's really important here is that people need to trust that when decisions are being made about what information to release and not to release, they're being thought about pretty carefully by Eastern Health, by the department. Also, in my office, we're watching very carefully. And we've been having conversations with those parties throughout the pandemic, sometimes providing them a little bit of advice saying, maybe I would have said this rather than that. And they've been receptive and listened to us throughout. And I think by and large, we've hit the right target throughout the pandemic.
Has your office received many concerns or complaints on this kind of thing and daily case numbers and locations from the general public?
I would say we have not, actually.
Interesting.
We really have not. I've only written one report on a privacy issue during the pandemic, and that was relatively early on. There was a case in a town in the western part of the island, where a mayor came into possession of some information and then was had disclosed it for a purpose that really was outside of that mayor's mandate. And we said, no, you know, you shouldn't have disclosed that to the public. You should have told the authorities. That's the only one that's really come to a formal report. And we would get some inquiries from here and there, but all things considered, I would say a relatively low number of inquiries about this kind of thing.
Yeah, that is very interesting. And Michael, as well, we hear a lot of complaints or worries about privacy, but then, you know, we also, for the most part, speaking about, you know, myself, I carry an iPhone and most people carry smartphones nowadays. And, you know, what about privacy when it just comes to carrying these kind of things in general? Because just for example, I could text my partner and say, oh, we should get this bottle of wine tonight or that bottle of wine tonight. And then you go on Instagram and sure enough, boom, there's an ad for that exact bottle of wine, you know, just a few minutes later. So I guess, is your privacy ever really fully protected if you're carrying a smartphone?
You know, some people have said that in this age, that of this age of constant data that surrounds us, that privacy is dead. How can we ever really be private? How can we even sensibly talk about privacy in such an age? And my counter to that is, I think privacy is not dead. I think privacy is really being born, because we're talking about it much more than we ever did before. And we're aware of it much more than we ever were before. So yeah, I mean, we give off what some scholars have called clouds of digital exhaust. Everywhere that we go, everything that we do, we give off what's called digital exhaust. And there's an economy that is developed around capturing that digital exhaust.
Exactly.
And doing stuff with it. And you know, I think we that leaves people like me, privacy professionals around the world, with a great deal of concern. Now, I have to say that, just to remind people that my mandate, my strictly speaking, my regulatory mandate is focused on public bodies of the provincial government and custodians of personal health information. But I do have a broad education and advocacy mandate related to privacy. So I do tend to talk about privacy-related things, and I certainly care about them. And so in our contemporary world, we do give off a lot of data. We do, you know, we send our data out there, whether, you know, when we use our smartphones, when we use our computers, we're providing the companies and public bodies, but mainly companies, with a lot of data about us. They're really interested in that data, and they're actively monetizing that data. Moreover, what they're doing is they're taking that information and then they're prompting it back to us. So just like you're saying, just like you said, when you hear you're texting your partner about a bottle of wine, and next thing you know, there's an ad for that bottle of wine. Well, some people might say, well, you know what, that's pretty convenient. You know, obviously the universe knows. It's not the universe, by the way. It's, you know, an algorithm knows that I want wine, and they're giving me an idea. Well, I mean, that's a benign way of looking at it. But what if you're texting your partner about, I don't know, your beliefs about a vaccine passport? And what if all of a sudden the news that ends up coming to you through the variety of ways that you get your news feed is shaped towards your beliefs? And so that this very same tools that these companies are using to pull to capture your data exhaust, they're using it to prompt back and shape your behavior. And is that really the society that we want to be living in? One where we're being nudged this way and that all over the place. And so, are we really making free and informed choices? And again, when we're talking about the wine that we buy, not such a big deal.
Right.
When we're talking about the political decisions that we make, it is a bigger deal. And just going back to why I'm here, you know, this afternoon. There are people that have very, very strongly held beliefs about vaccines, and then what they do based on those beliefs become life and death matters, literally,
right.
Life and death matters. And so if people are being misinformed by these algorithms on the basis of their initial biases, then that's something that starts to have an impact on human lives. And so all of a sudden, privacy isn't just this kind of arcane thing that we can talk about, but it's not. This matters in the real world.
We are going to take our final time out of the hour here on Target. We'll be right back, continuing this conversation with Privacy Commissioner Michael Harvey.
The workday winds down with Greg Smith in The Drive. Get up to speed on the day's events and current traffic, weather, and community updates each weekday afternoon on your VOCM.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
Welcome back to the program. You're listening to On Target. I'm Ben Murphy, sitting in for Linda Swain. We're chatting privacy with the province's privacy commissioner, Michael Harvey. And Michael, just before the break, we were talking about social media, algorithms, and privacy on our smartphones. And we know this is a growing problem, and now we know platforms like YouTube are now making a push to remove misinformation surrounding vaccinations. But overall, how do we get a handle on this issue? Is it just better and more stringent policy?
Well, I guess there's two approaches that we can take. I think we all need to be more aware of what we do online, and we need to make sure that all those, we try to understand what we're consenting to. But that can't be the whole answer. I don't know, Ben, if you spend your days reading all those terms and conditions and consent policies, but I'm sure that you don't, because you wouldn't be able to do anything else. They're not exactly written in a clear and easy to understand way for most people. While we all need to be more aware and mindful, I think, of privacy matters, really the real answer is better law. For the things that we were talking about, better private sector law. So, new legislation out of Europe and coming out of the United States, in particular California, are really developing new and more stringent laws that will improve privacy protections. In Canada, before the last election, there was a bill that was introduced by the provincial government, or sorry, by the federal government, called C-11.
Right.
It would have replaced the existing and rather creaky old private sector privacy law that governs this province and most other provinces in terms of private sector privacy. So that bill came out. It met from a lot of privacy professionals. It kind of landed with a bit of a thud. It was really felt like it didn't really go far enough. It did have some important new things, like important penalties and important powers for the Federal Privacy Commissioner. But in some other ways, it really didn't go far enough. And in particular, it really introduced a whole lot of broad exceptions to consent that some people felt really gutted the law. So that law, like other federal legislation, died when there was an election called. And so now privacy people across the country are looking to see what the federal government comes out with next. And is it going to reintroduce C-11 like it was, or is it going to go back to the drawing board? There is new private sector privacy legislation in Quebec. Even though we don't, at the provincial level, regulate private sector privacy here, they do in Quebec and Alberta and BC, and Ontario is thinking about doing it. The private sector legislation in Quebec is pretty good. Perhaps the federal government will look to that for a model. I guess we'll have to see. In terms of legislative reform, that's something that's all on the agenda here in Newfoundland and Labrador for the public sector. And so that's something that we need to pay attention to as well.
Yeah, and I was going to just about to ask, is that something you would like to see, more oversight for the public or the private sector?
Well, so last year, well, really, and earlier this year, the government engaged former Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, the Honorable David Orsborne, to conduct the mandatory review of the Access to Information and Protection of Privacy Act. And so we engaged in that review over the course of last fall and the early part of this year. And that on the privacy side of things, we really focused on greater regulatory protections in certain key areas. We believe that there's some things that can be done to advance privacy protections for public bodies. In particular, we focused on if any public body is introducing a new artificial intelligence, what we call automated decision making, then that's something that should be subject to careful oversight. And we talked about biometrics, the collection of when we say biometrics, we mean the collection of like biological data about people, like facial recognition or fingerprints or heat scans. This stuff is becoming more and more popular. So we did call for a series of greater privacy protections in that legislation. And Chair Orsborne did agree with many of our recommendations and had some recommendations of his own as well. The government currently has his report in their hands and is weighing what to do with it. So we look forward to seeing where they go.
And Michael, we are just about out of time, but I did want to ask, speaking of the Access to Information and Protection of Privacy Act, how does it stack up, or ours here in this province, stack up against other provinces across the rest of the country?
So I talked about the privacy part of the Act and how we believe that it's ripe for some improvement. On the access part of the Act, we're generally understood to have one of the best Act in the country. Newfoundlanders and Labradorians are privileged in that we get access to information faster, more of it, and usually for free than our counterparts elsewhere in the country. A lot of work goes into the proper operation of our access to information system. There's a lot of hardworking officials in public bodies throughout the provincial government, in our agencies, boards, and commissions, and in our municipalities that put a lot of work into providing that access to information for people. But for the most part, it works quite well. We're here to provide oversight. We receive complaints. We deal with complaints every year. We provide recommendations to public bodies. But for the most part, it's a very well working system. Chair Orsborne had some recommendations on how to improve that. We're eager to see what the government does with them.
Michael Harvey, we do need to leave it there. But Newfoundland and Labrador's Privacy Commissioner Michael Harvey, thank you for joining me today on On Target.
It was a real pleasure, Ben. Thank you.
And again, I am Ben Murphy, sitting in for Linda Swain. Thank you for all for tuning into the show. Have a great and safe day, and we'll talk again tomorrow morning.